welcome back to Community in Code. I'm your host, Chris Reynolds. And have you ever talked to a real live hacker? When I was a teenager, I loved reading articles about the early days of hacking. Even when I was just a little bit too late and maybe a little too intimidated to try most of the actual techniques myself. Still, the terms war driving and phone phreaking ring in my ears with a nostalgia for the wild, weird days of the early internet. My guest this week lived through those days himself and got his start in information security as a result of following in the footsteps of the legendary early pioneers of computer hacking. His current company, Mellapress, pays homage to his Maltese heritage. Mella can mean yes, no, and maybe, depending on the context. And its founder, Robert Abella, shares a name with the Prime Minister of Malta, which means he occasionally catches strays from CNN or the BBC on X for things that he distinctly did not do. We talk about Mellapress, which focuses on security plugins that complement the other solutions that are out there, things like activity logs, two-factor auth, and login policies. And we talk about what security actually looks like for WordPress when it occupies 43% of the web. Who's really responsible when things go wrong, how AI is making phishing attacks more convincing than ever, and whether the WordPress.org plugin repository has kept pace with the platform that it serves. Without further ado, Robert Abella. Welcome to Community in Code, the podcast where we talk to the human beings behind the commits. I'm here today with Robert Abella, CEO and founder of Mellapress. Robert, welcome to the show and tell us about yourself.
Thank you very much for having me, for the invites. I'm a bit about myself as a person. I'm not the professional life. I'm Maltese. I'm originally from Malta. I live in the Netherlands. I've been living in the Netherlands for the last 7 years. I've lived in a number of countries in Europe. I'm married. I have 3 children. And basically, WordPress years ago was my hobby. And yeah, now it became my full time the last few years.
Well, I want to talk about like sort of what you do, but before we even get into that, I was looking at the website for Mellapress, and I feel like I want to give you the opportunity to talk about the name, because there's a whole page that's about like the name Mellapress. What is the vibe of Mellapress, just like as a company, but also like where does the name come from?
Very good. Originally, the name was WP White Security because we develop a number of security plugins. However, we don't develop the typical, you know, like firewall, anti-malware, etc. We develop like logs to FA, authentication hardening, and similar stuff. So whenever we started sponsoring WordCamps and similar stuff, a lot of people were coming up to us, especially those who don't know about us, like, how do you compare yourself to, you know, WordFence, Sucuri? It was a bit frustrating, because even though we do security, we don't do that type of security. Actually, our products complement those services, not we don't compete with them. Also, the name was a bit too long, WP White Security. So we started the rebrand. It was quite difficult to find the name. I wanted, as I said, I'm originally from Malta. So I wanted to, yeah, put something from Malta, or at least my language there. We tried different things because we have a lot of words which are kind of like simple, can be easily read by English people and non-English native speakers, because sometimes, especially because English and the way they pronounce some words, it was difficult to find the right word. Mm. And we even paid a number of companies, I think 2 or 3 companies, where they suggest names, and we just couldn't get about it. And then I was talking back then to a colleague of mine, Joel, who is Maltese as well. And yeah, I said something like, yeah, Mella, because we use Mella is a Maltese word. It's very difficult for foreigners to get, as in, because it, depending on the tone, especially when your mother uses it, it means either yes, no, or maybe. So it's really, it's really
difficult. Pretty much the whole spectrum right there.
Yes. It's like when someone does, you know, it's like, is it a yes? Is it a no? It's something very similar. So it depends on the pronunciation, how you pronounce it, and the tone. It's like, okay, it can mean a lot of things. And yeah, it fits in really well. Like, yeah, like Mellapress. Oh, okay. And just, so we wasted a bit of money paying companies, and just it came over discussion. So yeah, that's the origin of the name. There's a piece of Maltese in the name. It's often confused because, of course, we are close to Italy. Mella in Italian is Mela, which is apple. Mm-hmm. So many people think it's apple, but no, it's apple actually, press. It's exactly. it's a Maltese word. And in terms of company,
Apple Press isn't that bad either.
True. Is there a company?
No, I don't Press think so. Yeah. Well, Mellow Press.
Yeah, if you're Italian, it means Apple Press.
Yeah, no. One of the hardest things in software engineering, right, is naming things, and finding a name that is easy for English speakers to pronounce. It just reminds me of, what was it, last year when the agency IMPSEED renamed to just Seed. Which is spelled SYDE, which still I think is problematic because yes. I think half the world is going to read that as side. But like that was the same thing, and they had a really funny video as they were rebranding, where they were actually even asking all of their employees how they pronounce it, and everybody had a different pronunciation. So like even internally in the company, they couldn't pronounce it. So yes, settling on something that is easy to pronounce is probably a key thing in developing any sort of product.
Yes, it's very difficult because even once you start reading about, you know, like brand names and stuff, there are so many. Hence, like, try to, for example, come up with a name that starts with A. So whenever there's a listing of companies, you're always, you know, all these type of optimization. But yeah, you can only go so far, and there are so many companies out there, and trying to find something that sounds like a okay word, okay to pronounce, and that fits and that works with everyone, it's quite difficult, you know. It's about pronunciation, it's about the length, a lot of stuff. So. And there are so many companies out there, so you have to find something unique, which is, it's very difficult. It can take it took us a few months, actually.
Yeah, yeah. We'll talk about what Mellowpress actually does, especially since you noted that it doesn't do security for WordPress in the way that most people consider WordPress security, sort of plugins or platforms or whatever. So, like, what is it what solution are you providing?
Yes, typically when people talk about security, they think of either hardening, like hardening the website, some sort of protection, firewalls, or some type of scanning or anti-malware cleaning, etc. We do none of that. We do our flagship product is WP Activity Log, which basically keeps a log of what logged in users are doing on your website. You know, someone installed a plugin, someone changed some content, etc. We also have WP2FA, which is a plugin that allows you to enforce. This is a sort of hardening, but you know, the typical firewall allows you to enforce two-factor authentication, even passkeys and similar stuff. So it's login hardening. And we have Mellowpress login security, which allows you to configure a number of login security policies. It's not just about the failed login, but also a number of things. For example, you can control or configure policies to limit when users can log in, range of time or which dates by user role. Use specific number of machines, so when they try to use a new machine, they are alerted. You know, a lot of these kind of like helping users. And the reason why we went that way, because first of all, we started with Activity Log years ago, but also it's the more time passes, the more I'm realizing. Like last week, I was at CloudFest, and most of the security presentations, that's what they were talking about. Unfortunately, I mean, like it's becoming way easier. If you want to hack someone, it's becoming way easier going through their users. It's becoming more difficult to exploit technical vulnerabilities, trying to bypass a firewall and stuff like that. And because we are using more and more AI, it seems like the cognitive abilities of users are lowered nowadays. So it's much easier to launch a phishing attack and all these stuff. So hopefully with, you know, using 2FA, maybe a bit more login policies and stuff like that, you and training the users and helping the users get alerted when a new machine is used or their user was used somewhere else. Yeah, that hopefully hardens that part of WordPress security as well.
Yeah. Well, and multi-factor authentication is crucial, right? Especially like since there are so many databases out there now, like you know, it used to be like every other week or at least once a month there'd be some new vulnerability disclosure that like there's a database of like 50,000, 2 million different username and passwords that were scraped from some, you know, Google or like some ridiculously large company and all the, and because people reuse passwords, then like if you're on a list somewhere, like you, I mean, I, it's impossible to follow it, right? It's like I can't even worry about my email address being on a list like that, because there's so, like, obviously it's out there. I can only worry about, like, making sure that, like, my passwords are secure, that I'm using two-factor authentication, so that when somebody does inevitably find my email address on a list, the password that they get isn't matching with the password that I'm using on an actually important site.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, if I don't know if you've ever heard of the website Have I Been Pwned?
Oh yeah.
If you subscribe to that one, you receive quite a few alerts because there are. I think you find data leakages almost on a daily. There are data leakages almost on a daily basis. So it's quite frustrating. Then of course, ideally you shouldn't use the same passwords for different websites. That's why there are password managers. But yeah, of course, 2FA eases that process. So yeah, even if you use the same password, at least. Yeah, the attackers, if they guess your password, they cannot log in because they need the one-time code either from your email address or from your mobile device, etc. So yeah, in terms of credentials, yeah, as you said, like, you'll find your email address almost nowadays in a lot of lists. It's funny talking about Have I Been Pwned because we were talking about phishing, etc. That website is maintained by Troy Hunt. He's a very popular infosecurity researcher. It's funny talking about attacks and stuff because last year he has a blog post about it. In fact, he was a victim of a phishing attack and his MailChimp list was stolen. So it's a bit... a security speaker at CloudFest had this really funny comment because he said, with AI especially, phishing attacks are becoming so good, they actually look better than the legitimate emails. So,
yeah.
So it can happen to the best of us. You can be Troy Hunt and it can still happen to you, you know?
Yeah.
So, yes.
Yeah, no, I met Troy many, many, many years ago. Back in the day, I was doing online developer training courses for Pluralsight. And Troy was also doing courses for Pluralsight. And all of his stuff is on security. And so there were Pluralsight held these sort of author summits. So they get all the Pluralsight authors to hang out and talk to each other and compare notes and stuff. And so I've met him. And one of the things I remember, he did a presentation, and he put like a Wi-Fi like router in the room, and basically, like, the idea was to see how much data he could get by people just jumping onto a freely available Wi-Fi node, and then showed it in the demo, like, just like, and this is all the information that I got from your computer because you just happened to jump on this free Wi-Fi that is, like, that I put here for this purpose that looks legitimate but is actually not. And then that was about the time when he had actually even launched Have I Been Pwned. So yeah, well, very, very big fan of Troy's work over the years. So have you always been interested in sort of the security side of web development, or what sort of brought you to the point at which you decided that this product, this set of plugins, whatever, that you're building with Mellopress is the thing that you want to be doing?
I've always been into security. Before working with WordPress, I started 13 years ago, in my previous career, I worked 14 years for a number of different startups, and they were all security startups, software startups. I had a different number of roles. I started as a software tester, systems engineer, lead systems engineer, product management. I was never a developer. I mean, I can write a bit of code. I used to write, of course, when I was systems engineer, a lot of bash scripts and try to automate all these stuff. So I have an idea, a good concept of these things. But yeah, since I worked always with security software companies and startups, yeah, it's what I heard for 14 years about, you know, like, security, what can happen, etc. So it's a field I know very well, basically. And most of my friends, some of my friends, which I still have from back on in those days, they also have security. For example, a friend of mine, Sandra, has a penetration testing company. So yeah, I'm always surrounded with security. So it's something I've done from day one, basically. So yeah, that's where the security is coming from. In fact, I jumped into WordPress because the last full-time job I had, we needed a blog. This was 13, 14 years ago. We needed a blog. We started looking. I've learned about WordPress, and back then WordPress, yeah, there was, security was still very weak. No, it's not the core. It's always the same, you know, like the reputation it had, etc. But there weren't a lot of security solutions either. In fact, I remember Sucuri starting. Mm-hmm. You know, back then it was they just used to do free scans, like an NMAP scan and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we tried to, because it was a security company already, we used to develop a web vulnerability scanner. We tried to develop a SAS for WordPress back then, a security file monitoring, etc. It was a bit of a flop. Nothing with the technologies, just the way we managed it, etc. And anyway, then it was time. I was working for 14 years for four different software companies, but always the same founder and CEO. I worked with him, etc., through my career. And it was time to move on. And anyway, just after 14 years, I need to start my own thing because we had just started working a lot with WordPress, even through my previous full-time job. I met a few friends from WordPress. And yeah, it just became, it's something I liked, you know, I really like. So yeah, security is coming since day one. I started working in IT, just because mostly I've worked with security software companies.
What brought you into security to sort of begin with? Like, where did that sort of interest develop?
This started when I was 19 years old. Back then it was different, of course. Hacking, even till this day, is still cool. Back then was a bit, you know, in my opinion, it was cooler. Nowadays, I was just at the CloudFest Capture the Flag. The winning team, I think within captured the flag in all the nine challenges within 18 minutes, because all they did spend 10 minutes set up the AI net framework, and then the rest was just automated. So it's nice from technology point of view, but it's not fun. Back mm-hmm. then, I remember in my early days, I used to go with my friend, you know, like war driving, capturing Wi-Fi mm-hmm. packets and stuff. It was much different. You know, we had this hack with, there used to be in Malta these public phones where you had internet access if you use the telecard. But a friend of mine found a bypass without the card. You know, that just like really, scanning for open ports. You try to use Netcat and all these stuff. So back then it was much more different. So yes, when I was at GFI, when I became systems engineer, as I said, it was a security software company. So we always was this learning a lot about security. But then I was sharing an office with Sandra, this friend of mine, and who was the security engineer for GFI back then. So 9-10 hours a day just talking about security, was helping me back then, you know, like configuring the firewalls, the routers and all this stuff, and learning, you know, about it back then, DMZ and all this stuff. So yeah, of course, then that's the part I do, because it's something that's very interesting. It's much more interesting than just systems engineering. And yeah, it's just also what the companies I worked for were doing in security. So it's just, I literally like always been in this since I was 19. I've always worked in this field in security.
Yeah, I remember being a nerd in the 90s and early 2000s, and I never did all of the cool old school analog hacking things that I read about, but I do remember reading about the things where like the whatever device that you get that you can that like simulates the sound that a coin makes in a payphone so that you can steal the, and then like being able to like rig up like off of that like connect it to like a modem and then use that to like dial up and like there's no kids these days will never understand the amount of ingenuity that goes into like all of the really old school like analog like hacking, which is actually like literal, like not hacking on the computer, but like with hardware devices that you had to like physically hold in your hand and go to actual like places in the world, not just from behind a laptop screen.
Yeah, the telephone thing you're mentioning, if I'm mistaken, it used to be a whistle with some serial in America, Captain Crunch, I think. And if you blow this whistle on a public telephone, it used to have the specific tone that it's and the center, whatever it's called, the switchboard, switch center, used to hear this tone and detect it as something. So yeah, it used to route you somewhere. I forgot how it is exactly, but yeah, it was much different back then. In fact, I just found, because I was just cleaning, a bit of spring cleaning, I found the book. I have the a book, Behind the Wires, from Kevin Mitnick, signed. And I remember reading those stories. Like when you read Kevin, if most probably the young people, some might know who Kevin Mitnick is. If you don't know who he is, find his book, Goes Behind the Wires, amazing story. So basically, Kevin Mitnick is the first popular mainstream hacker, basically. And yeah, he spent, after was hacking, he spent a number of years, I don't know how much exactly, I forgot, 5, 6, or 4 years, I don't know, with the FBI following him. And he was tracing the FBI, so he was always a step ahead of them. And this story is amazing. Ghost in the Wires is definitely a must read. And as you said, it will at least will give the hackers of today a bit of an understanding how different it was back then. Because nowadays it's just, yeah, automation. I mean, there's still some development and skills in it, but back then it was much more fun, much more interesting, at least in my opinion.
Yeah, well, I feel like right now, like, you get more mileage out of social engineering. Like, you get more mileage out of, like, deepfakes or, like, convincing someone to willingly hand over information rather than, like, actually, like, using any sort of, like, brute force methods to infiltrate a system anymore. Like,
Yes. People are not aware of these things until this day. It's not the first time I tried, just for fun. For example, I don't know, I'll walk into a supermarket, you see some employees walking into some office, you know, there's this sign, stuff only, and you walk behind them like, oh, sorry, can I watch? And no one asks, no one questions like, why are you coming in? It's just, they're so used, you know, like, because you're being nice, oh, yes, come in, you know, like, people are not aware about these things. So it's very easy, it's still very easy to, I don't know if it's coming from, because of politeness, but also, as someone said at CloudFest, also because of the, we are, especially people working in IT, we are relying so much on AI that our cognitive abilities are being lowered. Because people need training about, yeah, what's social engineering, what type of issues there can be. I remember, again, back in my early 20s, we used to, in Malta, there's this ferry between Malta and Gozo, two islands. And yeah, it was, and most probably even nowadays, it was so easy to go down to the engine room. No one asks you anything, especially if you just buy a high visibility vest, just put it on, hang any type of ID and just walk in. No one will even ask you anything. There are some YouTube videos actually about this. There are some people which just get buy a high visibility vest, a helmet, and a leather, and they just walk into offices and see what they can do. And there are some cases where they are stopped, but the majority, they just walk in and no one questions them. It's amazing. Yeah.
For sure. Well, from the perspective of an old school hacker and from the perspective of somebody who's been working in security for a long time, I know that, like, the thing that everybody from the outside of the WordPress community always sees or hears when they think about WordPress or they hear stories about WordPress, and even in Cloudflare's announcement of their new CMS MDash, they talk about, like, oh, the security is a problem, or specifically, like, security of WordPress plugins are a fundamental problem in the security of WordPress as a whole. So I'm interested to hear what your sort of take on or perspective is on WordPress security, since, like, you've been outside of that system and now you're working within WordPress and making security things for WordPress.
Yes, unfortunately, there are a number of factors which give WordPress this this really bad reputation. First of all, even till this day, whenever I speak to people outside the WordPress community, the security people, they do look down on WordPress. Like, oh, it's just a script kiddie, just some hobbyist application. A few months ago, I was talking to a recruiter, like, because we're looking for people, and he asked me, like, oh, is like, are there, like, full-time businesses working with WordPress? Like, yeah, duh, of course there are. Anyway, so, yeah, but I think the reputation is coming, yes, back in the early days, WordPress had a number of core vulnerabilities. By the way, it's not unique to WordPress. Every other software, especially in the early years, they have this vulnerabilities, which is nice because, of course, you can look at it differently. You can look at it like, say, oh, that software had a lot of vulnerabilities, so it's insecure. Or you can look at it, every vulnerability that's found and reported and fixed, that software is becoming more and more secure. So every software has to go through that phase where they find a number of vulnerabilities and then becomes more secure. Even our plugins, even all the top plugins, look at all the top plugins, Yoast, WooCommerce, they all had their fair share, which is normal. So I think the reputation is coming from there. Secondly, the media doesn't help. Matt Mullenweg mentioned it. He wrote something about MDash. And yes, like, unfortunately, when there's a vulnerability in a plugin that is installed on 0.01% of the websites, we start seeing the media, emails, even some vendors, like 200,000 websites vulnerable to. So that doesn't help. So people, of course, have this impression. Last but not least, everyone can develop plugins. Now, the problem which I see, like, people put all the plugins WordPress core in one box, but they're not. I mean, you have a number of plugins, a small percentage of plugins which are maintained by commercial companies. It's not always perfect, but they will always have issues. But yeah, there's someone behind them. They are being maintained. Of course, they will have vulnerabilities, but they are being fixed. But there, of course, you have a number of plugins that are from hobbyists or maybe someone who's still learning, and they have security issues, and unfortunately, they are never maintained. I think PatchSec, not last year, the year before, or last year, they had a hackathon, and I don't know how many vulnerabilities they found, but because of these issues, 2,000 plugins were closed on the repository, because when the repository tried to find the authors, they never got back to them. So you have to close them. And then, of course, these stories are used for marketing, but they are sensationalized sometimes. And people don't read how many good plugins there are. People read, 2,000 plugins were closed. Especially nowadays with vibe coding. I think Oliver from PatchSec just posted in March, they received 2,000 vulnerabilities, reports about 2,000 vulnerabilities. They still have to check them, et cetera, and verify them. But yeah, like, unfortunately, the bad news are used, rightly so, sometimes for marketing, but sometimes are sensationalized, and these they don't help the WordPress. Even like, as I said, like, whenever there is a vulnerability, you received all these newsletters, like 300,000 websites vulnerable. In regards to comparison to AMDash, because AMDash mentioned that they're going to, the plugins will be sandboxed, etc. Matt mentioned, looked at it differently. He said the fact that, I'm going to butcher it roughly, but the fact that plugins can change every feature of every functionality of WordPress, that's actually a feature, because you give them so much. I think it really depends on things. I mean, if you know what you're doing and use reliable plugins, yeah, it's not an issue. Of course, by design, especially if you try to compare WordPress to an operating system like Linux, etc. Yes, you have permissions and sandbox, but we're talking about a CMS to run a website, not an operating system. So personally, are there things that can be improved? Some things, but in general, it's always like core at this stage is very, very secure. Many plugins nowadays are developed by seasoned developers. There are seasoned companies that's been around for a few years. They have the experience. So if you use the right plugins, and do the right research, use the right plugins, and keep your software up to date, in general, you're pretty much safe. However, as I said, there are 60,000 plugins. Guaranteed, some of them are insecure or have some security issues. And whenever one of these have an issue, yeah, the media sensationalizes that. So of course, we are getting that impression. By the way, it's very important to point out, this is not just an issue with WordPress. Every software guaranteed has vulnerabilities. It's not a question of which doesn't have, it's a question of when they will be found. But the media unfortunately gives that impression, and those outside WordPress look at WordPress as if like, oh, it's a hobbyist script, someone, a few scripts and running this, so it's not that secure.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that occurs to me about that whole thing really is, like, I mean, I've been interested and involved in open source for, I don't know, 20-ish years, right? So, like, and, like, before WordPress, it was other things, and I was, like, you know, looking at, like, and using Linux, and you know, the size, the more people that use a particular piece of software, a piece of open source software, the more eyes there are on it, which means when you have more eyes on a thing, then it's more likely to actually get fixed than if you have, you know, not as many. And, you know, the other thing that occurs to me is, like, no one says don't use Microsoft Windows because you need to run McAfee on it or something, you know, like Windows had lots of viruses and bugs and, like, you know, exploits, and that was the operating system of every business industry, like, everyone was using Windows 95 or Windows 98, like, long past when they should have been using those operating systems. And, like, I remember how, like, I used to work in I used to do tech support for a grocery chain, and we had we had was when we were rolling out like the self checkouts and things and like photo kiosks and stuff, and they all ran like Windows 98, even though like I think the version that was modern then was like probably Vista or whatever, maybe Windows 7 or something. But like it was just because it was easy to write Windows 95 or Windows 98 software, and that was just like what they had licenses for or whatever. But like and like arguably it's probably a problem that a point of sale system is running an outdated operating system, because it wouldn't be that hard to like they're connected to the internet, they're connected to wireless, they're connected to the network in the store. Like you could get into it, like you know, like these are things that actually run things where, you know, there's a cash payment system like attached to the actual physical device, right? And those are far more impactful than someone's website.
It's still an issue nowadays, by the way. Just you can find a lot of articles where they explain like how especially main big frameworks, especially in the banking system, because of some old software, they still use some old versions of Windows or Linux, etc., and they cannot update. And it's funny. I remember this meme quite a few years ago. Like someone laughing from behind the curtains, and it's like the devil. Laughing from behind the curtain. The idea is like, because banks are all the time imposing all these compliance regulations and stuff, and then when you look at this, their networks, because of some old software, etc., they cannot upgrade. So their networks are much more insecure than all the software out there. So yeah, it's still a common issue, and I agree with you. No one says don't use Windows, and Windows has and still has a fair share of issues, quite frankly. But yeah, it's just I think I don't know. I think maybe WordPress is picked on because. As I said, like the news in general doesn't help. We really sensationalize it. Yes, can there be improvements in the core in the way like plugins interface with the core? Can you maybe segregate that in a way? Yes, there can be ways, but it also depends on how you use it. I think one of the biggest, I have always said that one of the biggest issues with WordPress is the fact that it's easy to use. As in, it's a bit of a Achilles heel, as in like the fact that it's easy to use is what made it popular, which is great. And so it really democratizes publishing. However, also when it's easy to use, you have a lot of people who start their own website and yeah, they have no idea. Maybe, I don't know, you're a baker and you have your own small business and you want to set up a website. So it's very easy to nowadays by hosting. Install some plugins, etc. However, these people, their focus is business. It's not like technical stuff. So they have no idea what it takes to maintain a website. So yeah, they install a few plugins. They never log into the website. They never update their plugins. So of course they're going to get hacked. It's not WordPress issue because they had some old plugins, or maybe they use some plugin which I don't know. Maybe it's not that reliable, etc. They never update it. So yeah, of course we're going to see all these websites hacked. And that one. Is a bit of a double-edged sword because it's very easy to use, so it democratizes the web. But just because it's easy to use, also you get all these inexperienced users using it. So then it gets this bad reputation. So it's a bit of a, yeah.
Well, and I think a trend that I've noticed looking at some of like Patchstack's reports and their state of security in WordPress sort of things, that you know, once upon a time, especially you know when I was like freelancing very early on in my WordPress career, like the mechanism by which a site would get hacked was very frequently related to file system permissions, and also like the security of the host, such that like if you got access, you could find it, you could sort of like CD into like the right directory, and then inject an actual file because the file permissions on your folder were not secure enough, so another user could drop a file there, and then that would like write some other file, or you know, you'd get something where it would execute, and then you have this like base 64 encoded bullshit, and like that was so is really like fundamentally like, oh, you did your permissions wrong, and now somebody was able to physically write to your file system, which is obviously bad. But that sort of attack isn't as common, I don't think, as now it's more like privilege escalation. Like it's more about like, oh, if you can get access in the first place, which again, as we've said, there are weak points. Your website, your computer is only as secure as the weakest password. So like if you can get access to the system, then once you're in, you can do all sorts of different things. And then it's like, And that becomes, that's both like, oh, well, if you have access to my website, then I'm sort of tanked anyway. But on the other hand, like, that's where a lot of the risks are. And it you really need to think about, like, the how you're enforcing a good, secure hygiene for just managing a system like that. Like, it's not even WordPress specific. It's like any system, a network or a web, or like a computer, like anything needs is only as secure as the weakest password in the link.
Yes, I mean, first of all, WordPress powers 40% plus of the website, so that's a big chunk of the internet. So of course, yeah, I mean, it will be the most targeted platform. Secondly, as you're saying, yeah, mostly are user issues. If you look at state of security from PitchTech, and the one of us here was in the early beginning of the year, was a joint report between Sukuri and PitchTech. The two biggest issues are user issues, mm-hmm. passwords, still the same old story, and outdated software. And that's why people are able to find exploitable vulnerabilities in plugins. And because even a plugin has vulnerabilities, this doesn't worry me. What worries me is how quickly does the vendor respond? Do they release a patch? That's all good. But even then, like, most people don't update their plugins. And that is that's a user problem. And that is PitchTech's main business. I mean, like, they have specific firewall rules for the specific number of plugins you have on your website. Don't get me wrong, it's a very good business model. It's a very good solution. But yeah, the premise is, like, if everyone really keeps their plugin up to date and keep their software up to date, PitchTech will run out of business mm-hmm. in theory. But yeah, so if you look at them, they're user issues. Because even if there's a privilege escalation issue, most probably, let's say you have an e-commerce store and someone hacks hijacks a customer account. Some people tell you, like, yeah, it's a low privilege account. Yeah, fine, it's true. But first of all, once you have access to a website through an account, regardless of privileges, you have one foot in the door, it's easier to launch social engineering attacks. However, even if you try to exploit something in privilege escalation, you can do it you can do it only if there's a plugin or there's a software that is vulnerable and allows you to do it. Because if you hack a customer account and all your software is up to date, you cannot escalate your privileges so easily, you know? So again, it always revolves around user issues. If you keep your plugin up to date and have some basic user security hygiene, then all these problems will be solved. But there are, again, many websites which are abandoned, they are never locked in. And yeah, again, we get WordPress is the problem. Now, actually, it's not WordPress the problem. The users maintaining the websites are the problem.
You mentioned earlier about how if you get the right plugins, if you find trusted plugins and you do your research and things like that, but with 60,000 or however many plugins there are in the WordPress repository, it's and like you do a search for any given string, you know, for I want this type of plugin, you're going to get dozens of results. So do you have thoughts around, like, I know how I evaluate plugins when I'm for myself, but I've been doing this for 20 years and I go to the conferences and I talk to all the people and I know who I trust, right? So how does a person who is a baker or whatever, like, who's doing this thing, who's trying to do their best to get, like, trusted software packages on their website, how do they evaluate what things would you suggest to help them evaluate, like, what the best way of finding a trusted plugin author when they're looking for a particular solution for their site?
Yes. Yeah, very quick question. In fact, first of all, the fact that there are 60,000 plugins, it's already a bit of a problem because you have this choice dilemma. I remember, by the way, when I got married, we were doing our house. My wife wanted to go to, like, four or five different vendors to choose the kitchen. I was like, oh, it would be nice if there was only one vendor and just go for one kitchen. I don't. It makes life easier. And the same with plugins. But yeah, there are a few rules. The repository, there are a number of statistics that help you. I mean, you have the number of active installations. If you just look at the number of active installations, if you look at the support tickets, how many support tickets were resolved, etc., and how quick they are resolved. And if you look at the ratings, those are already, like, three good things. You have the number of active installations, the support and the reviews. Of course, if you look at those, it will be difficult for new starter plugins to reach the, but that's how it works, you know. Like a plugin which has 200,000 active installations, first of all, or 400 or more, it means it's reliable, it means a lot of people use it, and most probably it's been around for a few years, and yes, it's well maintained. Another one, I would say it really depends, but usually I prefer, especially if I'm using it, if I'm using my website for business, I mean, if it's a hobby, it's one thing, but if it's for business, I would opt to go for a commercial plugin. And the simple reason is this: even if I don't need the commercial features, I typically go for the commercial plugin, because when you have a commercial entity behind the plugin, well, every business can go bankrupt, granted, but the chances of you being supported, getting support when there are issues being reported that the vendor is going to respond and fix it, are much higher. When you have a plugin which is completely free, there's nothing wrong with it, but if it's especially someone's hobby, even if there are issues or not, or if there is support, yeah, maybe this person only, yeah, it's a hobby, so he can only give 2-3 hours a week, for example. So he only replies on support issues on Saturday evening. So if you are using it for business and something happens, like, are you willing to wait for a week for a fix? So by using commercial plugins, you are supporting vendors and you are encouraging higher quality of plugins. But you're also, yeah, you're guaranteed, you're never guaranteed, but there is a higher chance of that plugin being maintained. So yeah, I would say number of active installations, look at the reviews, look at the support tickets, and optionally, but nice to have, if there's an option to buy a commercial plugin, it helps because there's a certain level of service, basically.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. It's in the business's best interest for you to leave as a good customer, for you to
exactly
have a good experience.
Yeah.
It's literally their livelihood. So like, they're financially motivated to support you.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, if it's my plugin that I just threw up on WordPress.org 5 years ago and then don't look at, I'm less inclined to respond to support tickets.
Exactly.
One of the things that you mentioned having so many options is a problem. A thing that like I observed when I first went to my first DrupalCon that was distinct about the Drupal community versus the WordPress community was that because we have this sort of like commercial marketplace, this sort of this e-commerce like infrastructure around WordPress as a platform, there's this thing that happens in WordPress that doesn't happen in Drupal, which is if I have an idea for a security plugin and you have an idea for a security plugin, we're essentially competitors. So we're less likely to share notes. We're less likely to work together. Because I want to hold on to my IP and you want to hold on to your IP. Whereas in Drupal, if you have two separate sort of plugins that both are modules that kind of do the same sort of thing, there's more of a culture of like, well, let's put our ideas together and collaborate and make this a single solution that is better for everyone. And so as a result, there are fewer options, but also as a result, there's less potential in sort of the Drupal ecosystem as a whole to go out and sell that thing, because everyone's like trying to collectively build like the best thing, the single best thing, but also I can't take that idea and then sell it, you know, because like, yeah, they've struggled to sort of like productize the pieces of Drupal that the WordPress ecosystem has sort of naturally, and there's like pros and cons there. Like there's a trade-off in terms of like collaboration versus competition and all sorts of things, and then also just having so many options.
Yes, I think there are pros and cons to both models. Personally, I prefer the WordPress. One thing I would, if I could change one thing in the WordPress ecosystem, I would maybe, for example, if you look at the WordPress repository, maybe set the bar a bit higher. For example, if a plugin, I mean, I understand some plugins don't need to be updated so often because they're just like a few lines of code. They do a very specific function. But still, I would enforce at least, the plugin to be updated once a year, at least, for example, or even if you just update supported version. Nowadays, of course, the repository has notifications, like when a plugin hasn't been updated for the last 3 major versions, you get a notification, but it's still there. It's still there. People can still download it. It can still lead to issues, you know? So I think by Yeah, having some kind of like stricter regulations when it comes to the repository. Maybe we'll have a bit less plugins and the quality might go a bit, not necessarily improve the quality, but we'll have less noise, let's put this way, less like of these small plugins, etc. Merging of plugins and functionality, I think it really depends on what the people are doing. The fact that you have that WordPress has all these many options is also a good sign. It means there are a lot of both business and opportunities, and it also usually leads, the more free the market is, the more open the market is, it leads to more innovation typically. Mm-hmm. Because once you're going to merge things, then they're working towards a certain direction. Another competitor is not, if someone has another idea, they're not even, it feels like you're not encouraged, because now you have two people working together or two groups working together. So starting something new is going to be difficult, more difficult, etc. So
you get the kitchen sink problem, right? You get like everything exactly piled into one thing that you don't necessarily
need. So I don't think there's one better than the other. Both has, but yeah, I think if the .org repository has some sort of stricter rules, it makes life easier. Like even when PatchStack did the hackathon 2 years ago and they closed 2,000 plugins, the reason why they closed them it's not because they had security issues, it's because there were much more plugins which had security issues. But when the repositories tried to contact the owners of that plugin, the owners never got back to them. A simple test, which is quite fascinating. Last time I was speaking to someone, I forgot who, at CloudFest, who used to work, help with the plugin reviews team. And it's always surprising how many plugins there are that they try to contact the owner and the owner never responds, for example. That could be a simple test. Every 6 months, make sure there's a contact. If there's no contact, you're getting off the repository. You know, now of course there's the question of backward compatibility, because if there are people who has this plugin installed, what's going to happen with them now? I don't know, maybe some notification, propose a replacement. But yes, but by opening this door, of course you allow more innovation, but you're also creating problems. So there is no better good or wrong, but yeah, it's a bit of a trying to find the right balance.
It's an interesting point, because like I feel like some of this has to do with like where WordPress was when it started in contrast to where it is now, because what you're talking about is something is a more mature way of identifying trustworthy packages for a robust product that powers 40% of the internet. But when the WordPress repository existed, it was just like, hey, I've got a cool idea. Like I had a weird hacky thing that seems funny, and I'm gonna, you know, put up this kind of jokey plugin. Like I had a friend that wrote a plugin called Login Roulette, which on a random sequence, it'll just log you out on like on any given page load of the admin. Just like, you know, like just dumb stuff, right? That was just silly and like jokey and whatever. I have a plugin that I wrote called updates. I can't remember what I called it, but it basically annoyed you. It gave you a GIF that would be like a really disapproving GIF if you had pages on your site that hadn't been updated in a period of time, and it would get progressively more annoying the longer those pages were left unupdated. Back then there wasn't even, I don't think GitHub really existed then. So like there wasn't even an outlet for sharing these sorts of things to other people to use even as a joke. But now we've got this framework, the WordPress.org repository. It still has all that stuff, but now we're also needing it to power 40% of the internet and the infrastructure around that. So like it's almost like we've moved so far, we've come so close to the sun, and like there's still like these fundamental issues that were part of like the openness and the freedom and like the weirdness of the internet when WordPress was young, but now we need something more mature.
Yes, I mean, as you're saying, when WordPress started, when the .org repository started as well, it was for a different time and different CMS. The WordPress was much smaller, powered much less. But now, yeah, it's much more popular. It's much more stable. It does much more different things. It's used for so much more many things and other solutions. But the .org repository of course, there have been changes and problems, but it seems it didn't move as fast, and it's not where it is. I mean, as I said, I think, as you said, like you had this plugin, like it just shows you the annoying GIF. It's nice. It's a nice thing to have, even as a hobby. But yeah, just because the number, as you said, there are 60,000, and many people, like I wouldn't say look down, but yeah, like just because when they see that number, like oh, there are too many plugins. They might get overwhelmed. There are too many choices, and they don't even try. You know, so yeah, by having some sort of stricter regulations, stricter policies when it comes to what can be submitted, what not, or at least everything can be submitted. But if after I don't know a year or two, there are a lot of plugins we still have 10, 50 installations. Like, so are they really useful? You know, maybe we should find a solution. Maybe they are useful for those 50 websites. Don't get me wrong, but maybe at that stage we need to look on a case by case basis what these are and try to help those websites. Again, I know it's all the repository is all running on a voluntary basis, so it's not as easier said than done. But yeah, we definitely can. I'm sure we can. The repository can be cleaned a bit. Even as I said, even just sending an email every 6 months to the plugin owners, like "Hi, are you still there?" I'm pretty sure we'll be closing quite a lot of plugins if we do
that. Yeah, for sure. Well, thank you, Robert, for coming on. Thank you for talking about cool security things. Where can people find you on the internet if they are looking for you?
Yes, I'm on LinkedIn. If you search for Robert Abela on Google, search for Robert Abela WordPress, because Robert Abela is also the Prime Minister of Malta.
Oh,
and okay. he ranks better than me, unfortunately. it's funny because on Twitter, quite often I get tagged or sent messages from BBC, CNN, you know, like all this stuff. So like I'm not that Robert Abela.
Not
I'm another
one.
Yeah, because I have my Twitter handle is Robert Abela, but the Prime Minister is Robert Abela _PM or something like that. I was on Twitter X, sorry, before him. So I'm on LinkedIn, Robert Abela X as well. And if we have the website, malapres.com. I also, by the way, a few months ago launched my own website, robertabela.me. The simple reason, honestly, is I'm like everyone else, there's this huge AI hype. And I needed an excuse to play with it. I mean, I can develop my own team and stuff, but might as well, let's try a bit of vibe coding, you know, play around with sub-agent skills and just play around with it. So yeah, My website, robertabela.me, LinkedIn or malapres.com are the best way to find more about me.
Awesome. Well, again, thank you for coming on. Thank you, everyone, for watching or listening to this in the future. And we'll see you on the internet.
Thank you very much, Chris. Thanks for having me.